morning. Thanks for joining us today for this webinar. My name is Ramesh Chandak. I work for IT Showcase team at Microsoft. Today we are going to be talking about the top four features of SQL Server 2016 and how one of the projects at Microsoft IT benefited from evaluating and using these four features. Today with us, we have Anubhuti Varshini, subject matter expert on SQL Server and on the project that she has been working on. Before I ask Anu to introduce herself, let me remind everyone that you can share your questions via email at showcase@microsoft.com. We'd like to learn more about yourself, so please use Bing Pulse to share more information about yourself so that we can tailor our discussions accordingly. Anu, can you introduce yourself and then dive right into the session? Thank you.
Sure. Hi Ramesh, thank you for introducing me. I am Anubhuti Varshni and I work as a program manager with Microsoft IT. I have been working with various MSIT projects, specifically business intelligence related projects. At MSIT, we take a lot of pride in being the first and best customers for Microsoft products. In this case, for our business intelligence project, we used SQL Server 2016 and its new features. And what I want to share with you in this presentation is the benefits that we reaped out of upgrading to SQL Server 2016 and using the new features, as also some of the usage patterns, some of the best practices and usage patterns that we recognized would work best, and some limitations that we encountered in the process. So diving right ahead into the session, this is the overall sequence of what we'll cover. The first, we'll start with the SQL Server 2016 new features. Then we would get into some context of the Microsoft IT project that has been over which the SQL Server 2016 new features have been implemented. And then we will go feature by feature on the top four features which were implemented and what we learned in the process. Okay. So SQL Server 2016 new features. SQL Server 2016 has had a tremendous amount of improvements with respect to scalability, manageability, and performance improvements that is offered natively in SQL Server 2016. So some top new features are improvements to in-memory OLTP, improvement to column store indexes. So in-memory OLTP and column store indexes were already there in 2012 and 2014 respectively, but in this 2016 version they have had significant improvements to them. Then we have support for temporal data, support for row level security, that is natively ability to support row level security, native JSON support, dynamic data masking, a query store wherein you can check the statistics of your queries, and live query statistics, that is query statistics when the query is running live, StretchDB, which allows you to transparently archive your data, and support for Polybase. So while these are the top eight features that we looked at, the ones which we are covering are highlighted in bold, that is improvements to in-memory OLTP, column store indexes, temporal data, and row level security. Providing some context on the project on which these new features were implemented. I've been working for this project for Microsoft IT Enterprise Services, the business intelligence and reporting platform for enterprise services. Our customer is Microsoft Consulting Services and Premier Services. Microsoft has a wing for consulting services, wherein Microsoft is given consulting projects by our end customers, and we are paid milestone based for the consulting project implemented. As also, there is another set of services that Microsoft provides, which is Premier Services. Consider them as an annual maintenance contract for the product that you have bought. That is, when a customer buys a Microsoft product and implements it, Microsoft supports it on an ongoing basis by providing Premier Services. The business process that gets lighted up in this for this line of business is the order to cash business or order to cash process. That is, initially when we engage with our customer, we call it as an opportunity created. The business development team works with the customer, and this opportunity is then translated into a deal, which is further translated into a contract. Contract, as we talked about, can either be a premier contract or be a consulting services contract. Once this contract has been signed, the global resourcing management assigns resources to work on the contractual project. And further to that, the delivery takes place. During the delivery, we have to manage the resources. So that is the process of resource management. Timesheets need to be filled, expenses need to be entered. And then there is a process of capturing the survey and the customer satisfaction feedback. Post that, there is the final process of billing and invoice tracking with the customer. So this is the entire business process flow that the business intelligence reporting platform for enterprise services supports. As you can see, it is pretty much a complex process with rules and complex querying and reporting capabilities required. And our customer, like all customers, has certain expectations of the platform. For example, the top few asks from our customer are that we should be able to support complex analytical reporting as well as operational near real-time reporting. All the reports and queries should be highly performant. If a new feature is asked for, the turnaround time to implement the feature in production should be very fast. We should have a scalable and manageable architecture to support the increase in number of data sources that feed in data into the system, as also the increase in data itself. Then all the data should be secure. That is, we should have robust information security and risk management practices. In addition, if we need to upgrade, for example, to SQL Server 2016, the effort needed to upgrade the software should not be too much. Always, the business requirements would take priority over the software upgrade. So our business always wants to reap the features and the benefits of an upgrade, but the effort needed for the upgrade should be very low. With these asks, we went into using SQL Server 2016 on new features. To give you further context of how the project works, I would delve into a little project architecture itself. Enterprise Services Business Intelligence Project is a data warehouse. And like any other data warehouse, the basic pattern is that we have multiple data sources. As we talked about our business process, there are multiple upstream tools for each of the boxes in the business process. We have opportunity management tools, that is a CRM system and an opportunity tracking system. We have a system to manage and track resources. A couple of systems to manage contracts for Premier Services and consulting services, Then for delivery management, we have multiple tools. Further to that, we have another set of tools for expense and billing. And then we have our master data, that is the product master, the account master, and all the other taxonomy masters. Data from all these upstream data sources is acquired and ingested into what we call as Enterprise Services Operational Data Store, or ODS. ODS is typically used in two ways. One is, it is a store for the data which is further transformed into the construct of dimensions and facts in the ES Analytics data warehouse. In addition, the data in ODS is integrated from all these sources. Hence, it is also used for near real-time analytics reports. I also want to mention here that ES Analytics data, that is the transformed and integrated data, is also put into the enterprise-wide data lake of Microsoft, which is a big data store for Microsoft, which has data from multiple other businesses as well. This entire data is further used for reporting purposes in a multiple set of reports. So the reports on top of our data are SSRS reports, tabular cube reports, SSAS reports, Excel reports, as well as some data extracts which are used by data scientists and some of the end users. Now, I hope we are clear on the architecture of the project. Further to this, let's delve into the individual features that we used and how we found the implementation as fruitful for this project. The first feature that we used is in-memory OLTP improvements. Now, why in-memory OLTP? Why in the first place did SQL Server team think it important to introduce the concept of in-memory OLTP? In-memory OLTP. So at one end, we see that the hardware is improving a lot. That is, memory sizes are increasing. We have Azure G5 server, which has 32 cores and 448 gigs of RAM. As you can see, there are multiple core processors using which we can have multiple parallel processing. And then, so this is at the demand side. On the supply side, sorry, this is at the supply side. On the demand side, there is a huge data explosion. With Internet of Things coming up and number of transactions increasing for our applications, there is a whole new level of data that is available for analysis in business intelligence platforms. As also, there is also a need for real-time responses. All the reporting systems and the end customers want an instant feedback on the on the data and data implementations. That is so that need is increasing a lot. Now, what given both the demand and supply, so we have the hardware and we have the increase in data. So what is needed at this point in time is that we have our traditional database systems equipped with algorithms and improvements to be able to take advantage of this improved hardware to handle this increased amount of data. And SQL Server 2016 and in-memory is exactly that. What are the specific features that enable this is SQL Server 2016 in-memory is a scalable and efficient system which can use multi-core systems, and it works on lock and latch-free architecture. The data access is memory optimized as opposed to disk access, the actual hard disk access, and hence decreasing the overall latency. Then it has the capability to use natively compiled code, that is the code in which business logic is compiled into assembly code. as also it is fully integrated with SQL Server, hence reducing the total cost of ownership. So the in-memory OLTP is a part of SQL Server itself. So your DBAs would not have to learn new tools to manage the in-memory OLTP system. And the developers can use the same SQL language that they are so comfortable with to do the development in the in-memory system. So hence, reducing the overall cost of ownership. So now that we have established that in-memory OLTP is something that was a much needed ask, I would want to explain the improvements that SQL Server in its 2016 version did. In-memory OLTP was introduced in SQL Server 2014, but then it was the first release, and in SQL Server 2016 there have been much significant improvements to the offering. So first improvement is that now we have made it easier to develop new applications or port existing applications onto SQL Server 2016. See, earlier in 2014 version, multiple constructs like alter table, alter procedure, some of the data types like var char max, var binary max are not supported. Natively compiled UDFs were not supported. Nesting of natively compiled stored procedures were not supported. Subqueries were not supported. DML triggers were not supported. So all these nodes were not supported in SQL Server 2014. What it means is that if you had to port your existing application in memory, then you had to do significant changes to your stored procedures and to the SQLs that you had written to be able to reap the benefits of in memory. But in SQL Server 2016, all of this is now supported. And the net result is that the existing applications can be as is used and moved, ported to in-memory tables and stored procedures. The second improvement is improvement in manageability. Earlier, you could not, in SQL Server 2014, you could not add or remove indexes. You could not alter tables. You could not update stats for in-memory tables. Now you can. The scale has improved. This now supports up to 2 terabytes of in-memory tables. As also that the other improvements in SQL Server 2016, that is support for transparent data encryption, row-level security, and temporal tables that we will be covering in this presentation itself. These new features of SQL Server 2016 are supported in memory as well. Now, how Microsoft IT project that we just talked about used in-memory tables. As you saw in the project context, we had multiple data sources being ingested into the BI platform for enterprise services. One of the things that happened was that Delta data used to come every day into our staging tables. And there was a huge IO overhead, because of which the performance was slow, and we were not able to be as responsive for our end users as they would want us to. So what we did was we moved a lot of our staging tables. In this case, we moved STG timesheet, that is the staging timesheet table, into memory. What happened was that as a result of moving this table into in-memory, disk IO was highly reduced, and we were able to reap benefits in terms of improved performance of ingestion with this. One thing that I wanted to explain here is that there were minimal code changes needed to our ingestion code when we did this. So we were able to complete the entire movement in, let's say, one sprint of ours. The second use case that we used in memory successfully was in the timesheet table itself. So timesheet table was a complex table in terms of the amount of data inserts that were taking place. Approximately 10 sources concurrently used to insert data into this timesheet table. There was a problem of deadlocks and network overheads. What we did was, again, moved the timesheet table also in memory. Again, minimal code changes were required and the change was almost seamless. And as a result of this, the data load performance improved. Also, the reporting performance improved. The queries on top of the timesheet table also, specifically during month ends, were this timesheet table was highly used when all the business managers wanted to get the amount of work done by the resources on a particular project. At that point in time, concurrent access of timesheet table was possible, and it being in memory, it was much faster as well. As discussed earlier, in-memory tables operate on optimistic concurrency control, and multiple parallel operations that are running on the table run on different versions and are committed using delayed durability clause. I would want to mention here that even by virtue of being in memory, all the transactions that happen on in-memory tables are 100% 100% we can roll back the transactions to any particular state. So in memory doesn't mean that the data is not durable. Data is fully durable. How we also improved the performance of our downstream reporting queries was that we had a set of canned reports that our downstream users used on top of the timesheet table. We converted the reporting queries into natively compiled stored procedures, and we saw a huge performance improvement in that case as well. To summarize, the key takeaway of implementing in-memory enhancements is that if you see that your queries are getting slowed down due to I/O overheads and data lock deadlock issues, then moving them to in-memory, you can have enormous performance benefits. One of the things that SQL Server 2016 enhancements enable is that the data code change or the code change itself required to move the tables in memory and be able to get reports out of them is very, very low. You can actually almost seamlessly move these tables in memory and the stored procedures to natively compiled states. Okay, moving on to the second feature. This is the use of column store index improvements by Microsoft IT ESPI project. Here I would like to recap a little bit on what column store indexes are. Column store indexes were introduced in SQL Server 2012 as Project Ekaton. What is column store? In column store, the way data is stored in the database is not row wise, it is column wise. So if you just see the graphic here, you have the existing table or partition. This table or partition is first broken down into row groups. A row group can at max have 1 million rows. And further to these row groups, instead of breaking these row groups further into smaller row groups, these are broken into column segments. If you have 10 columns, each of the columns will end up having a segment of its own for that particular row group. And then each segment is then further compressed based on the data type and the compression possible into compressed column stores. So this is the compressed column store. benefits are real. Compression minimizes or eliminates IO bottleneck. So the amount of data stored becomes compressed state becomes very less. Hence, the memory footprint is reduced and the input output is reduced. It allows for batch execution. There is a concept of segment elimination. That is, for each segment here, for a column, the column segment, for each column segment, we can store the metadata for that column. For example, the minimum and maximum value for that column segment. Now, given that we have the metadata stored, the where queries, the queries which with where clause predicate become much faster, because with that metadata we can much efficiently eliminate those column segments. Also, the queries which select only a few columns, specifically the slicing and the dicing queries, where you select an aggregate of a metric against one or two columns, those queries are much faster because now you're selecting only a very less amount of data instead of reading the entire row. Then there is an ability to for aggregate and string predicate pushdown to storage engine level by using column store index. So that allows for improvements in performance of queries. As I said, column store indexes were first introduced in SQL Server 2016. In SQL Server 2012. In SQL Server 2014, there were certain improvements in the feature. And further in SQL Server 2016, we have a huge set of improvements that have been made. I'll cover the most important improvements. A table can now have one non-clustered column store index, and this will now be updatable. Initially, it was write once, read multiple times in the column store index. And if you had to update data in the table, the column store index would have to be remade for the entire table. Now, this is not the case, and the non-clustered column store index is updatable. The clustered column store index now the clustered column store index table can have one or more non-clustered row store indexes. That is, row store indexes are also available. There is an ability to have a primary key on top of a clustered column store table. The snapshot isolation is supported, allowing for durability. The compression delay is allowed for non-clustered column stores. Always on readable secondary support is allowed. We can create a filtered non-clustered column store index by specifying a where clause. So whenever you create a column store, a non-clustered column store index now, you can also supply a where clause. That is, only a set of data can be included in the column store index. Then we have the capability to create column store index on in-memory tables, which has its own limitations, but it is allowed. Aggregate and string predicate pushdown to storage engine level is also supported for better query performances. Now, Microsoft's IT's use of column store index. Again, we evangelized the column store index of SQL Server 2016 on timesheet table. Timesheet table, as I covered in in-memory also, has a high trickle insert rate. And there is a need of real-time operational analytics on top of it, in terms of near real-time data ingestions, that is the ETL from the source to the staging, to the operational data store, to the database, all should be near real-time, as well as at the reporting end, the downstream reports getting data from the timesheet table should report the data back in an SLA of few seconds. What we did was we introduced updatable non-clustered column store index on top of the timesheet table to improve the query performances. The index was filtered to exclude hot data. So we just talked about a column store index with where clause. That is, we can now have a filtered non-clustered column store index. What we did here was we said that the column store index should be applied on the cold data. What do you mean by cold data? Cold data is the data which does not see too much inserts or updates or deletes on top of it. So for example, with respect to timesheet table, we saw that functionally only the data which was in last 1 month was hot. That is, we would see most of the creates, updates, deletes happening only for last 1 month. All the other data was logged and frozen and cold. So we created the column store index on top of the cold data and excluded the hot data out of it. For data ingestion performance, other row store indexes were kept as is. So you would know that multiple times when we do ETLs, indexes slow the performance of ETL. They improve the performance of the queries, but they slow the performance of ETLs. With the filtered non-clustered column store index, and because it excluded the hot data, the ETL performance was not reduced, because it would use the existing row store indexes, while the query performance of the downstream users was highly improved, because now they would use the clustered non-clustered column store index in their queries. One more thing that I wanted to mention here was that if we wanted to have both the benefits of in-memory and column store, that was not possible for the timesheet table. That is, if the timesheet table was kept in-memory, a filtered column store was not possible. A normal column store was possible, filtered was not possible. So this is something to note down. Benefits that we saw were enormous. We could see up to 5x data compression and reduced storagement, reduced I/O. The query performance was inherently better. The queries with where predicates were much faster because of what we talked, the features of column store, which is segment elimination and aggregate and string predicate push down. Then ETL deletes were faster just because we enabled the delete buffer with a 5 second sync. Key takeaway. So now with the usage of column store indexes in timesheet tables, these are the top three bullets I would want to highlight. That is, if you have a near real-time reporting needs on large fact tables, then you should create non-clustered column store indexes which are updatable. And in this case, the ETL performance would not be reduced or impacted, while you would see definite benefits in the downstream query performances. The second important thing is that if you want to ensure concurrent performant select statements as well as inserts, update, delete operations on a huge fact table, you have multiple options with SQL Server 2016 column store index. For example, filtered column store, then support for snapshot isolation and ability to keep the existing B3 indexes as is. The third important point to note is that in-memory column store indexes right now have limited application. That is, only tables with less number of columns will be benefited, as an in-memory column store index needs the entire table to be moved in memory. Also, filtered non-clustered column store index is not allowed in in-memory tables. Okay, moving ahead to the third feature, which is net new in SQL Server 2016. This has been introduced for the first time in SQL Server. This is called temporal database. Now, what is temporal database? A temporal database is a database which has a built-in support for handling and archiving old versions of data that has been modified over time. It includes two tables. One is the main table, which is designated as the main temporal table, and the history table, that is on an update or a delete, this history table would be populated with the prior version of data. This is very much related to the construct of slowly changing dimensions as applicable to multiple data warehousing concepts. Now, why temporal? Why is there a need of having a temporal database? First of all, real data sources are dynamic. There is specifically in dimensional data, the attribute of dimensions keep on changing, and there is a need of having to be able to see the state of data at a particular point in time, which is at a particular time point in time in past. To be able to do that, workarounds and building the capability itself is a complex task. It is expensive in terms of both effort and performance. It is limited, inflexible, and oftentimes inefficient. SQL Server 2016's temporal features make life easy in that sense. That is, they have the ability to switch on temporal for a given set of tables with no change in programming model. You can unlock much new insights. How does it work? So, whenever you designate a table as a temporal table with the actual data, and there is an insert, update, or delete on top of this table, then the old version of data moves on to a corresponding history table, which is created by the system for the designated temporal table. At any point in time, if you have to time travel or you want to get the snapshot of data at a particular point in time, you can do that by querying on the history tables. At this point in time, there are certain limitations that have to be noted for temporal tables. That is, temporal querying over linked servers is not supported. The history table cannot have constraints. Inserts and update statements cannot reference system time columns. Truncate table is right now not supported. You cannot directly modify the history table. Instead of triggers at this point in time are not supported. And use of replication is limited. Even so, the benefits that temporal data features provide are enormous. So we at Microsoft IT used temporal database for implementing slowly changing dimensions in our analytical data warehouse. Before implementation of temporal, we used to have custom code to implement slowly changing dimensions. That is, and that had its own limitations. For example, to be able to implement SCD, the custom code, in the custom code, you would end up having accidental overlap of date ranges. Because it was implemented for each of the tables separately, there was always a gap in terms of you could have an incorrect insertion, modification, or deletion, specifically with multiple data sources, trickle inserting data into the tables, and data confirmation programs and rules and rule engines running. Then in terms of retrieval, you could have inconsistent retrieval of current and historical data. And there were also performance issues, specifically when you had to run a point in time historical data query. With a temporal approach, Once we designated a table as temporal, the rest was taken care of by SQL Server 2016. The approach was simplified and scalable, and no custom code was needed whatsoever. Fresh data queries were very, very fast, and even historical data queries were faster than the past. Some points that I would want everyone to note here is that if you implement temporal on any table, by default all columns are now versioned. If you want the versioning to be implemented only for a subset of column, you would have to create a subset table, that is only create a subset table which has columns only for which you want to track the history, and keep the other set of columns in a separate non-versioned, non-temporal table. Whenever you have to alter a table, you have to switch versioning off. Make the alter statement and run, and then switch versioning on again. I want you to note that using implementation of temporal, we were able to reduce a lot of custom code that we used to maintain slowly changing dimensions. One of the things that that is also important to note here is that at this point in time, the temporal data feature is not bi-temporal. That is, future updates are not supported. Updates only historical updates are supported for the temporal tables. So how do we do it? So if you see here, we had a table called HR person, and we wanted to mark it temporal. So for a temporal table you have to have a period for system time, that is it has to have a valid from and a valid to column. Then you have to have a predicate of setting system versioning on, and you can optionally give the name of the historical table. That is, in this case we have given the history table name as HR person history. And this is how you very simply move a table to be a temporal table. Key takeaway: after implementing temporal tables, these are the two major bullet points that I want to highlight. That is, if you have the requirements to audit data or to maintain a slowly changing dimension, then temporal table provide a way to simplify implementation. We would reduce the implementation time of introducing one new slowly changing dimension complex table to half by implementing temporal tables. That is, the turnaround time reduced significantly. You should also see that because of some of the limitations, at this point in time, do not use temporal tables if you have to maintain data audit for future transactions. That is, this is supported right now only for historical transactions. So those are the two key takeaways. Moving ahead, row-level security. Row-level security is also a net new feature that has been introduced by SQL Server 2016. As you would see, applications often need to limit a user's access to only a certain rows of database. Specifically in data warehousing applications, these are multi-tenant applications with a shared database and multiple tenants getting data from here. For example, in our case, we had multiple account managers getting the data of the timesheets of their resources. And there was a specific security requirement that only the project managers or the people in the project hierarchy should be able to see their data. Other people should not be able to see the data of the resource times and expenses. So to implement this, we had custom code implementation, and every time a new table would need to be introduced, that custom code need to be introduced on top of that table as well, and on top of all the downstream reports as well. This was a pretty traditional approach, and drawbacks were that drawbacks were that it was decentralized, susceptible to runtime errors, and it was difficult to maintain specifically during upgrades. Row-level security, inbuilt ability to secure data at row level gives the users or the administrators ability to have the access control at a much finer grain, that is keeping the multi-tenant databases secure by limiting access by other users who share the same table. It is transparent for multiple downstream applications because it is implemented at database level. Howsoever multiple applications you put on top of database, be it a Power BI report, be it a SQL Server reporting service report, or be it any other reporting system or custom application, by virtue of the security being implemented at database level, any query would already have the security implemented on top of it. The third benefit is centralized security logic, and this is more very important specifically for central security groups like information security and risk management groups. And so to be able to audit and ensure that all the downstream applications on top of a particular data set follow their given security logic and are secure, you could have this row-level security is a boon. That is, the enforcement logic resides inside the database and is schema-bound to the table it protects. The application maintenance is also reduced, and the complexity of the downstream applications is also reduced. How does it work? Row-level security works on a predicate-based access control. That is, there is a user-defined inline table-valued function to implement the security logic, and this predicate determines which rows can be accessed by which users. That is, for a given user context, or a, for example, username. User context is nothing but, let's say, a username in simplified terms. The table valued function that we are talking about here can be arbitrarily complicated and can contain joins with multiple other tables, but the entire logic lies in a capsule inside this inline table valued function. At this point in time, two types of security predicates are supported, that is the filter predicates, wherein the table valued function allows for filtering data in terms of select updates or deletes, and only the rows which satisfy the filter would be popped out for a user query based on the security implementation. The second type of predicates are blocking predicates, that is explicitly block that, okay, this user cannot access this set of rows. So those are the two types of security predicates that can be set up. Then once you have the table valued function and the security predicate inside it, the second thing that you implement is the security policy. Security policy is the collection of security predicate for managing security across multiple tables. So for example, you have to create a security policy, that is my security policy in this case, and you can add the filter predicate, that, for example, function security predicate with the data and with the parameters like user, role, geography, and start and end time on a particular table. So the security policy can be implemented on a particular table, and it can use one or many filter predicates. Here is the next level of detail for implementation of row-level security. So for example, consider the HR person table, which has columns like persona ID, first name, last name, and the job role. you create a table, inline table valued function, which has the context of username and the job role. And based on the job role, you have the capability to access a particular set of rows of data. So for example, a project manager for a particular project key can access data only for that particular project key. Then once you have created this inline table valued function, you have the third step is to create a security policy that adds the security predicate on multiple other tables. So HR person is a master data table, which has the list of all employees. And based on this employee and the project key, there are multiple engagements and tasks. So ultimately, what the implementation suggests is that a project manager with a particular project key can access data for the tasks and engagements related to that particular project. Microsoft IT's usage of row-level security. In the data warehousing project, in the enterprise services business intelligence platform, traditionally we implemented row-level security using custom code. At this point in time, we are planning to move to row-level security model. Some of the examples of the security roles that we have to support are engagement manager, who can access a particular engagement project resource, timesheet, and expense and invoice because he or she owns a particular engagement. Then at the project manager level, an engagement has multiple projects. So within the engagement, project managers are supposed to access only their particular projects. A delivery resource has the access should have access only to the task assigned to him or her and the timesheets that the person fills. Then on top of that are geography-based managers. That is over and above the engagement project and resource hierarchy, you could also access data based on geography. That is, if you belong to a particular geography, then you have the access to accounts, engagements, projects, and tasks for the particular delivery geo. In the traditional implementation, we had an implementation by using custom views on top of our base tables, and the downstreams would have access to only these views, and each of these views would have a security predicate implemented on top of them, custom for each view. With row-level security implementation, we could centralize it. We had only a single table-valued function with all complexity introduced inside the function itself. The design is much, much more simplified and the code is reduced. And being able to explain it to our ISRM group, that is Information Security and Risk Management group, is now much better because they can see the implementation encapsulated within one single function. We are also much more confident and agile in allowing downstream applications to access our data, because this is now transparently implemented across any downstream application per se. For example, SSRS, Tabular Cube, Power BI, and other Excel reports access our data, and the checks that we now have to implement are simplified and non-custom, standardized. Key takeaway is that if there is a need to implement centralized data access security policy, and the security policy mandates data access privileges at row level, then you should quickly upgrade to SQL Server 2016 and use this out-of-the-box feature. So those were the key features, the four key features that we used, and found out the benefits that we can reap out on upgrading to SQL Server 2016 and using these new features. I would like to summarize with this slide that on the basic features and the key takeaways. The first feature that we covered was in-memory tables. The takeaway is that if your queries are getting slowed down, due to I/O overheads and locking issues, and then move them to in-memory and reap immediate performance benefits. The code with SQL Server 2016 improvements, code changes needed to the code for ingestion as well as reporting is minimal. For the second feature that we covered was column store indexes. That is for near real-time reporting needs on large fact tables. Query performance can be improved by creating non-clustered column store indexes, which are now updatable in SQL Server 2016. And when you do that, while the reporting performance is improved, the ETL performance is not reduced. The third feature that we covered was temporal tables. This is a net new feature which simplifies the implementation of slowly changing dimensions and our audit history requirement. Use SQL Server 2016's temporal table feature if you have audit requirements or requirements to maintain SCDs, and you would see that you would quickly turn around for any new table ingestion and development which is slowly changing, and the architecture is scalable and manageable and can support multiple sources and increase in data. The fourth and final feature that we covered was using row-level security. That is to implement a centralized data access policy at row level. SQL Server 2016 now provides out-of-the-box feature. The output is robust information security and risk management capabilities, and also quick turnaround and whenever you have to implement a new feature or onboard a new downstream reporting application. With this, I thank you all for your patience, and I hope this I was able to cover the features in sufficient amount of details, and you would benefit in your own upgrades by looking at the patterns using which Microsoft IT has used these new SQL Server 2016 features. Thank you, Ramesh. Thank you for giving me the capability. It was really interesting and to interact and provide knowledge of these features to the future users.
Thanks, Anu. With that, I think we are close to our session. So Anu, thank you. Really appreciate your time. I hope our customers got a lot of great insights from your experience in working with SQL Server 2016. With that, I'd also like to thank everyone for joining today's webinar. If you'd like to see more of these, please take a look at the next webinar that we have available for you at www.microsoft.com/IT showcase. Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.